Vigo's having to operate even more attackingly now. He really hits that one. Oh, that is just sensational from Luis Vigo. Goes for goal. Oh, what a goal. Hiratoshi Nakata with a scream.
Welcome to episode 11. We have Ade, Mr. King of Analytics, on today's show yet again. Thank you, Ade, for your time. How are you?
I'm good. Ready to chat about some footy.
That World Cup stuff that we tried to get off our chest in the group chat. And Mr. Hurt by Football by none other, Carlisle Baker Jackson.
We need to change to Hurt by Arsenal because it's not football, it's Arsenal. I don't know. You can't have someone that's hurt by football comment on football. That makes no sense.
That's the best part about it. How are you doing? Good?
Yeah, no, I'm good, thanks. I'm good. It's been an interesting couple of days, I guess.
Have you got the Wales-US game in the background?
Yeah, it's playing. It's on mute. I want to see how my fellow countrymen will do.
I was actually discussing this with Ade just before we started. I was looking at the US team man for man. I think it's the first tournament I've seen the US play in that I actually recognize where their players are from. And it sounds like an ignorant thing to say.
See, that's funny because I don't know half of them this time around. But I do know in terms of actually being a squad rather than, say, a player or two, it's a lot better. Because the issue generally in the past has been there'd be like Dempsey or, you know, like
that was the only person I used to know where he used to play, Clint Dempsey. And again, it's ignorant because all we see is the Premier League. I mean, you look at
that's the same with like most countries, right? And it's over time because they put so much money to trying to just raise the floor. Like MLS obviously started off, wasn't great, got scrapped, came back. But like because of that, the ceiling's risen quite a lot for American players. So quite a lot of the American players, not quite a lot, but some of them that will be playing will be in Germany now because they literally will get poached by like Dortmund and stuff because technically they've got the skills. They just maybe need to go somewhere where they can actually just get better at football.
And actually adapt to like more of a European style. Again, it's an ignorant comment, but it's the reality of where the best players are playing, right? Just on the World Cup, I guess that's the more of the theme that we're going with. Ade, I think we'll kick off with your topic if you're happy with that. I mean, feel free to delve in into how you found the World Cup so far. I mean, I know you haven't caught most of the games due to work commitments, but yeah, let's have a chat about what your thoughts are so far and what your main topic of discussion is or hot take.
Yeah, well, thanks. I think so far, you know, I've tuned into a little part of the Ecuador game, mainly the beginning and the end and the highlights. And then the England game, I caught a little bit about it. And it, you know, there's some football to be played. And I guess seeing the matches themselves, even for the brief amount of time that I've been able to watch, has like really brought back exactly what a World Cup is. It's like an amazing time, especially as a football fan. But there just seems to be this undertone, which has never really crept over into football punditry or broadcasting about all the kind of ills of the World Cup bid and where it's been hosted and all the stuff that's led up to it. And it's kind of like, I don't know, it just really makes me feel a little bit weird when you've got football outlets commenting on political issues and giving their two pence and kind of dominating their shows based by on covering that as opposed to, yeah. It just doesn't make sense, you know. You typically see build-up, and what the good thing about the World Cup is they build up, they profile players, they say who's going to be dangerous and who's going to be kind of effective in the game. But I think it's just been dominated by this narrative, and it's like, you know, not to say that there's not things awry going on or that have gone on, but I think you could spotlight any tournament's host and look at the ills of the nation. I think there comes a time where you have to start concentrating on the football. And that's now, especially when the World Cup's starting. It's a disrespect to the players who are actually, you know, trying to play at the top of their profession, and I just don't understand it. And you know, it'd be interesting to hear what you guys think. But I think it marred the first part of the World Cup for me because it didn't seem like the focus was on football.
My funny thing. Well, I was just after you mentioned this in the group chat, I was just looking, or I was just, you know, forming my sort of opinion, and I was just like, as a hilarious small take on this. I mean, Carlisle, feel free to jump in, but I was just like, we're crying about censorship and human rights and all that kind of stuff from a UK perspective, yet literally at the opening ceremony the BBC censored the whole thing. We didn't even get to see it. So I just found that really funny. We were just like, how are we pointing fingers and we're literally doing the same? Well, I don't know about the human rights thing, but let me not get into migrant crossings and all that. You know, it's just ridiculous. But I fully understand your point. Like, I'm just it drains away the energy. And then even today with the Iranian national team, there was a bit of, you know, the build up was around the armband. Nothing about, you know, profiling Jude Bellingham, who had a fantastic game. He's the second youngest ever player for England to score at World Cup. And then you had that dominating beforehand. Then you had the Iranian national team, you know, fair play to them, didn't sing the national anthem. The fans were booing the national anthem as well. So, yeah, fully on your side with that. But, yeah, it would be good to get Carlisle's, you know, view on that as well.
I think ultimately what it is the way the world is going / has been for a while. And I mentioned this to you earlier in terms of sport being used as like a soft power, yes, in terms to like have influence, whether, you know, just to say we're the best in the world at this, or to just kind of show that you're superior to other countries. And I think what makes it a bit more awkward for this, and I'm going to have to pick my words carefully because I don't want to say the wrong thing or it come across in the wrong way. But yeah, I get the sporting aspect of it. But then also, remember, sports people, for better or for worse, essentially are able to have a platform, right? And we always say have a platform, use it for whatever you want to use it for. Like, that's kind of just, you're in a spotlight. There are some people that choose to do so. For instance, for America, Megan Rapinoe uses her platform to talk quite a lot about LGBTQ rights. Marcus Rashford as well, for instance, used his platform for the free school meals for kids last summer. So,
I mean, you can even trace it back to like 90s time. David Beckham was like, I don't know, I think he was the first ever footballer to pose at like a gay magazine kind of thing. So he became
That was Attitude in 2002.
Yeah, so he became one of the first ever, like he became a gay icon, right? Just given the fact that he
did
kind of stand up for
them. And that's why Joe Lycett had the whole thing about he was going to shred 10K of money if he didn't, you know, say something about why he was getting paid by Qatar to da-da-da-da, and then pretending to shred the money, but just donated the money to LGBTQ friendly or supportive charities. I mean, it's hard, right? Because there is the whole thing of you can't be holier than thou in terms of, you know, this is a country, they've obviously not necessarily done things in the best way to get the stadiums built, etc. But as much as Gianni Infantino may have chosen the wrong time to make his points the other day when he was talking about the Budweiser, the alcohol not being able to be served in certain places, when he was saying, you know, Europeans colonized the world, did all of this for like 3,000 years, so you don't have a moral high ground to speak on, which is true. I think you can't use that at a time when there are some very obvious things which are an issue. And for instance, with the alcohol thing, it's very easy to say, okay, cool, so don't drink. But I think if you were someone that was planning to go there, and not saying you wanted to get absolutely wanked and smashed, but if you're like, okay, let me have a drink at the stadium, then find out you can only have a drink at the stadium if you've paid 20K for a hospitality box, then yeah, the lines get a bit less clear about what's okay, what's not okay. Obviously, Qatar said that they were going to be more open to certain things. And again, the argument is that's the culture. I think you have to be careful when you say culture like that, because you can imply culture / religion are things that they're not. So, for instance, obviously, homosexuality is illegal over there. And I think if you argue, oh, it's their culture, you're essentially saying most Muslims are homophobic, which I think is a very broad brush sweeping statement no one should be making. Like, you just can't do that, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying I don't understand why people have the reservations about this. I think the problem is, obviously, it's meant to be a sporting competition, right? And everyone has the chance to use it as a platform to say whatever they want to say. I've got nothing against that. I just think there's got to be a bit of give and take. But I also do feel that because this is the first one held in the Middle East, they're definitely having the spotlight shone on them in a way that probably wouldn't happen somewhere else.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point and well articulated, to be honest. I mean, Ade, from your standpoint, I'm trying to understand where do we actually, like, I get your point in the sense that, you know, specifically football was never that sort of playing field in terms of, no pun intended, around politics. I mean, Carlisle put a good point around sports. I think that was more, if I'm not mistaken, more of the times with athletics, you know, because of the Olympics and I guess the stature.
Yeah, that's more athletic,
the stature of how many games you could actually put forward, and hence you showcase how big your country is, etc., and the talent you have. But in terms of football, what have you observed in terms of, is it just the dominating headlines around negativity, or are we actually getting to the point where over the last 2-3 years, you know, political unrest across every nation has just been at an all-time high, and that's why it's starting to creep in? I mean, yeah, happy to take your thoughts on that, Adi.
I think it's a bit of both. I think in terms of there's no question about political unrest, just how high profile some of the things that are happening across the world, how people have been treated, how people are ruling and presiding over their nations that they're kind of put in charge of, have really started to disenfranchise some members of the public. There's a lot of kind of sides being drawn in different places, and people are being encouraged more to voice their opinions, to show discomfort or to show support for whatever they agree or disagree with within nations. It's this is a time where people have more of a voice thanks to things like social media, but just people just feeling a bit more brave to voice their standpoints and to show them with whatever they can do. So where we talk about sports players kind of trying to stand in solidarity with the LGBTQ community, they're more encouraged to take up a stance just from a general society standpoint. But I do believe that ultimately it's difficult. Some things need to remain sacred, and some things, it's very difficult for certain people to put themselves in a position where they start becoming, you know, moral commentators when, because they have a platform by sport, they're allowed to have their own opinions on stuff. But when it opens them up to criticism, it opens them up to kind of having to be perfect. For example, case in point, and, you know, I support this cause. For example, this is something totally different, but Marcus Rashford and the school meals directive that he's run on, I totally support him. But the thing is, what it opened him up to do is then people who might not be in support of his campaigns, or people who might not be behind his message and movement, they start to pick holes in what he does as his profession. They start to pick holes in his character because he's not living up to what he sells in that movement. So there's a very thin and fine line that these players tread when they start, and pundits and anyone who's involved with kind of one area of stuff, and they're looked to and watched for that, start trying to cross over and commentate in areas that are not specifically there. I don't think it's wrong. Sometimes they voice their concern, but I think when it starts to detract, especially at a tournament like the World Cup, when it slowly starts to detract from
the whole point of a World Cup, everyone's
there to see what people have spent, you know, people from countries like Ecuador, countries like, who aren't necessarily so high up in terms of wealth, and people are traveling to go and see their country play. I think that really should be allowed to
to remain what it is, and we tackle all these other things in the forums that they need to be tackled. That's really the point. I think, you know, yeah, there is unrest in different places, but it shouldn't start to dilute sport, because ultimately sport will end up being impacted and ruined.
I'm guessing in that way, it's almost like you're saying there has to be a time and a place to do such things. And it's not like we're bringing groundbreaking news around, you know, human rights and stuff that all of a sudden it needs to be forced on this platform. We've been doing it before the tournament, right? So there has to be other ways around helping and raising awareness. But the question I had, I guess, back to you, Kala, and then Ade, you could probably chip in. My take around Qatar was pretty straightforward. I think, CJ, I mentioned this to you. I was just like, again, I feel like Infantino said some silly stuff. I agree. But some of it also I agreed with in terms of what he was trying to say. I get it. You know, English isn't his first language. So a lot of the time you have to kind of read through the lines around what he's trying to say or decode it a bit. But this is kind of the two, Russia and Qatar were the last two World Cups that the previous president, Blatter, kind of messed up FIFA's reputation over. So in a way, I have a bit of sympathy that they kind of have to ride it out and they have to just get these two out of the way, and it helps them now build on hopefully a better outlook in terms of what FIFA is and how the World Cup is. But what are your thoughts on riding it out, essentially, but more importantly, making the best of what the situation we have?
It's a tricky one, right? Because the whole, like, there's a time and a place for these conversations is true. But then if, like, there is no bigger time and place than now to do it, right? And again, like, there's obviously people that would have wanted to come to Qatar, but were like, oh, I'm not sure, I don't feel safe doing so. I get that. I can't, like, try and make out that that's something weird, because, like, there's places in the world that I will not travel as a black man. So, for, like, football fans, and remember, football is meant to be a great unifier, right? But if you're a gay fan, there are many that haven't come to this. And I don't want to belittle that and just make it seem like, oh, I'm being contrite about, like, people's safety or anything. So it's hard. And I think the conversations are still going to happen. Ultimately, the whole thing is, let's hope the football is entertaining enough that, you know, that can get parked to a side at least, whilst the entertainment of this game is happening, and then the conversation could resume as well. But then I don't think the sporting sense of the competition is doing itself any favours, because like I was saying to you, the VAR call for the offside yesterday with Qatar when Ecuador scored and that was offside, like his knee was offside. And then the VAR call today when England played and Iran got a penalty that wasn't a penalty, really, based on the fact that Harry Maguire got literally rugby tackled to the ground, but nothing was done. And I think that then not shifts the focus away from the sport, because obviously it is sport and that's what we're all here for. But if those things kind of run a bit more smoothly, then people can kind of just focus on that in terms of, okay, we're here for a sporting event. And then, oh, America just scored. Silky as well. So like, it will help people to focus on the sport if less of those issues happen. This is such a hard thing to talk about without trying to come across as super bigoted or just trying to be pleasing to everyone. So yeah, I get this is an easy thing to discuss, but I'm hoping that if people are going to make noise about certain things, at least some change will come from out of it. And like you said, Infantino, he had no say in this, so he's basically just stuck with what Blatter did. So, okay, he's paid loads of money, whatever, but he has to make the best of a bad situation. Hopefully things will change and this could be more inclusive and we might see more World Cups in the Middle East. But as I've read, quite a lot of the Middle Eastern countries supposedly aren't exactly happy with how Qatar's had to change so much in terms of kind of acquiescing to what they feel is things that are kind of not really the culture or the way of life. So for instance, the alcohol, that was something that they like a lot of other countries were like, yeah, we don't know about doing this. But then the other flip side is Qatar signed up knowing that they'd have to do some of these things. And whilst it may not be your necessary way of life, if you've gone into something saying, yeah, we're not going to completely change how we are, but we'll be more amenable to certain things, then that's why I understand why a lot of people are kind of, you know, quite troubled by some of the changes. So again, and this isn't trying to be super dramatic, but the beer change, right? And you go, and if someone's there and they're going, okay, cool, so it was okay to drink, now it's not. So now you don't have a problem with gay people, and what, now you might have a problem with gay people. There was someone, for instance, that tried getting into a stadium wearing a rainbow, having like a rainbow pattern on his shirt. Now, obviously, the point was to see whether it could be done or not. He was refused entry. But from everything we've heard, that should be allowed. And it's not the whole kind of black and white, let's just paint them as terrible people. But it's that kind of inconsistency and discrepancy, which means that I get why people feel quite uneasy about this being held where it is.
It doesn't have to be the pundits, like Ade's been saying, like especially the broadcasters. I mean, you know, they're the media guys. But like, why do we need to then, for example, before a game, start talking about what governments are doing before a football game? For example, the Iran game that happened today. They were like, I think the BBC were quite, or was it on ITV? I can't remember. They were just like, oh yeah, like the regime or the government's been absolutely atrocious. So best of luck to the players or some stuff, something like that, paraphrasing, of course. So that, I get that's my...
Okay, so I didn't think that, so I can't talk on that. But then my issue is obviously if you're going to say that for one place, you kind of need to say it for all, because...
It's coming off very, like, it's coming off very focused on certain nations. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying what's happening, for example, in Iran is a good thing. It's quite sad, and especially the fact that the players have to carry that burden into a football tournament, and everyone else is just like, why are they even participating here when what's going on at home? I'm just like, this is basically their highlight of their career, and they've probably dreamt of a moment like to play for the nation for I don't know how long. They cannot physically control what's happening politically, you know? So...
Yeah, exactly. And an answer to that would be, in that same vein, you then have to look at the fact that the UN have said that there is essentially a humanitarian crisis in regards to child poverty in this country.
Yeah.
That, like, you have to balance it out. So I completely agree with that. I've got no problems with people saying this or saying that, but it has to be fair. Because otherwise it just looks like you're looking through the world for a very, like, imperialistic, oh, we're the Western world and we're better than you view. And that's not it.
The main fact that it got censored on BBC, I mean, that for me was a bit messed up. Like, we couldn't even see the opening ceremony. I find that really, I don't know, I don't want to say racist, but it was really like one-minded and imperialistic view. But yeah, Ade, to wrap up, like, what do you think we should be doing? Like, is there something that you'd like to see broadcasters do less of going forward, you know, for the rest of the games and stuff?
I'd like to see us just focus on the football. I'd like to see highlights. I'd like to see in-depth analysis of players. I'd like us to kind of see the backstories to people's World Cups, like you were just alluding to, players who have dreamt of being here all their lives, or young players who this is their first tournament. Us looking more into them and really trying to understand the beauty of what the World Cup is, because in some pockets, despite all the things that are going on, there's a nucleus of joy in all these nations competing against each other that the World Cup brings that no other tournament can bring. So I think
one of those stories is the Netherlands goalkeeper who has only played like 80 games in his career. He's 27 years old and was selected for their first game. And he was almost out of a job like a few months ago or probably a year ago. He's looking to become a policeman. And now he's representing Netherlands at the World Cup, which is pretty awesome in terms of a story. Okay. Yeah, sorry, go on.
And he kept it clean.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine your first your debut, basically. If not, yeah, your first time in a World Cup. Pretty incredible. I think he's 6'7", if I'm not mistaken, as well. So
yeah. I'm not surprised by that.
Tall guy.
So the Dutch are tall, so that is not a surprise.
yeah, I guess we can touch on, Carla, what you mentioned just earlier in one of your points around, you know, VAR and how that's kind of impacted the way we're viewing our lens of what's going on in terms of the game. Do you want to just, for those maybe, I guess, that didn't catch it, but what exactly happened with that Ecuador call? Like, what actually happened?
Well, being spoilt by the delights of what we call the Premier League, we're no strangers to bad VAR calls. So the first goal that was scored after about, I think, 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes.
This was by Valencia, right?
Yeah, it was headed in by Valencia, who scored the other two goals. So really, he got a hat trick. And if someone had bet on that, yeah, you're annoyed. They deem that the player, when the keeper, I think, went up for the ball, or just before that, the Ecuadorian player, that the winger, I can't remember his name, because his knee was slightly off, it ruled everything out offside. Again, it's the whole thing of you could be overzealous and you can use lines, and because it's not in real time, slash it doesn't, like, it's all about set angles to a degree, right? Because you can make someone that's not offside look offside and vice versa. And people might say, well, that's just you being facetious, but that's actually the truth. So that was a perfectly good goal, chalked out. So I'm just glad that Ecuador still managed to go ahead and win the game. And then today in the first half, there was a corner to England against Iran, and both John Stones and Harry Maguire essentially got rugby tackled. Nothing was done. And then at the end of the game, literally the end of the game, John Stones, the ball came in over the top. I think it was from a free kick. Might have been a corner. I can't remember. John Stones basically had his arm behind him. It knocked into the player, like he hit into the player. The player went down, and yeah, VAR call, and a penalty was given. So yeah, we just need some consistency with this. I feel on the whole it's been okay, but also those two decisions, I guess, because they've been the main ones that I've seen so far, and both have been bad calls. Yeah, so
I mean, made even louder the fact that it was the first game of the tournament. Already it's shrouded in controversy around, you know, just everything going on. And then you have like a bad VAR call. But the only other thing is, like, it's semi, isn't it like the first time they're using semi-automatic offside technology or something at a tournament? So apparently that's what they're basing the decision off, that he got triggered and it was offside. So I don't know. Does this essentially, as we mentioned, take us away from actually just speaking about football, like Ade mentioned, with regards to VAR? You're depending on the technology, Ade, for example, to help you through this tournament, as I mentioned. But what do you actually do apart from, you know, you've got the best referees in the world, they've been coached on how to use it and how to refer to it. But what do you do then? Like, do you just rely on that sort of technology to take you through decisions, or do you actually make your decision yourself as a referee and kind of dictate the game going forward?
I think you might see two different schools of thought from two different types of referee. If you're somebody who's in vast experience, you might just let the game run on and make calls by yourself because you're comfortable with taking the heat. There's some referees that might hide behind the technology and say, well, the technology said so, you know, because when it comes to a World Cup, this stuff counts. And no one wants to be making calls, especially, you know, as Carlisle said, when people have put bets on. And, you know, with the World Cup, you know, the bets are going to be crazy. No one wants to be making calls that could make you some high profile enemies. So I think in this instance, but the directive from FIFA will be to rely on the technology. They paid way too much money across the board, invested too much around the world to try and make it work. And the thing is, I don't think it detracts from the football when we speak about it, but I don't think it's abnormal for bad VAR calls to happen because we still haven't ironed that out in the domestic league. So seeing it at the world's biggest league, they're not all of a sudden going to click and get it right and get, you know, things spot. Those mistakes are still going to be there. And it's more about now the line between humans trying to work in unison perfectly with technology. And I still think we've got a long way to go to do that in general because, yeah.
I mean, we've got...
Now, I might be wrong here, but I find it quite weird that FIFA hasn't just set up like a global school of how to best implement VAR and that then trickles down into the leagues. Because from the way that I can see, it's very much a use this in your league. So whether it's, you know, Bundesliga, Premier League, Serie A, whatever it is, and everyone just gets left to it. So,
That's on the confederations, to be honest, because FIFA can only do so much because UEFA is the head of Europe, right? So then there must be some sort of directive or instructions to tell CONCACAF, UEFA, all these guys, basically AFCON, to implement, etc., or do the training this way. So maybe it might even just take a long time. I mean, for example, I think the Women's Super League in the UK doesn't even have VAR. So that just tells you, I don't think it's across the board, and I don't think everyone is using it the same way we are. I think it's just top leagues in the world. That's about it. But I just recognize we're like 35, 40 minutes into our chat, and we've not even spoken about the quality of football and World Cup. And it kind of echoes our point earlier around, you know, can we at least just talk about the football? But we got like we got a question from, I think his name is Ross, from the Energize show within the chat. And he asks, I guess, to keep it short and sweet, were England and Harry Kane cowards for what happened with the armband? I guess, Carlisle, you can take a first quick shot at that. Maybe keep it under a minute.
Yeah. Short and sweet, yes. Because it would have made a bigger, like, it would have been a bigger embarrassment if FIFA had threatened to card someone for wearing an armband, than actually making them go and do it. Again, I understand the game implications, because two yellow cards, that's a suspension. I mean, if you're going to serve a suspension, do it in the group stages, right? But
and for a good cause.
I think it would have been more awkward for FIFA to then turn around and say to someone, find someone for wearing an armband that supports equal love for everyone. Like, that's a horrible storyline. The FA should have just been like, you know what, it's cool, we'll write this out. Let the player wear it. If Kane gets carded, boom, we've got the press release already saying we stand with our player. We don't accept any kind of, you know, bigotry, racism, etc., etc. So that's an open goal in terms of like a national football association. I don't know why they didn't do it, but yeah, I
fully agree with that. Adi, what's your 1 minute take on that, or thoughts on that?
I don't think they were cowards. I think, you know, it's a difficult situation, and it goes back to what we were talking about before. How much does he jeopardize his participation at a World Cup over something like this? It's a very open, as Carlisle said, an open goal for him to prove something. But this is what you leave yourself open to, because there comes a point where your views might conflict with your sporting integrity or your ability to conduct what you love the most as your sport. If he gets a yellow card in this first game, then gets a yellow card in the quarter semi-finals, you know, he's going to rue doing it as much as he would stand up for something. He knows he would rue doing it. So I don't think he's a coward. I think he just basically focused and took the warning of sporting sanctions to be important, which I do think for a World Cup is important. This is the pinnacle of his professional career, so I don't think he was.
The funny thing is, I read an article, I don't know why they didn't just give the armband for, I know Harry Kane's the captain, but they should have just given the armband to like Jordan Pickford or someone, or like a goalkeeper, and you can essentially get away with them getting suspended, you know what I mean? And like, you have two other goalkeepers you can bring in, you have Nick Pope, Aaron Ramsdale can do it as well, sub them off at some point. Like, there's ways around it. I think they missed an opportunity, in my opinion. But at the same time, like you said, Ade, I think we just need to focus on the football rather than, like you said, Ross, the gesture signaling. And yeah, he makes a good point in the chat. He says maybe the whole team should have won it. Then how do you yellow card 11 players? It kind of avoids the whole... it actually makes even a stronger statement, in my opinion. So yeah, valid points, Ross. Thanks for your question. I guess wrapping up this sort of segment in terms of the World Cup, Carlisle, we can jump on the last point. Unfortunately, John can't make it at the moment. I haven't seen him on the chat. But there was a point around focusing on the quality of the game and what we're experiencing in terms of football quality across the board in the World Cup. So obviously, it's the first one in winter, and there was a cram schedule in October, which essentially led to quite a lot of high-profile injuries. I guess my question to you would be, what is your view of what's happened so far, and is the World Cup basically the game of football? I mean, it's a yes to the question. I know are we losing out on, you know, the quality of what we're experiencing now just because of how the whole schedule is actually done and people are essentially getting injured like Nkunku and Benzema?
This is probably the best time to have the World Cup because we're catching the majority of the players actually fit. And I know that sounds dumb because we've literally started this talking about how they've been injured, right? normally you get a World Cup in summer, right? So every country essentially has had an entire 32 to 38 games that they've played, right?
Yeah.
Then obviously in the UK, we don't get a winter break. So we're already dead by that point, which is, I think, generally why we struggle in a lot of group stages. Like, that's just why. So weirdly, I know there's been injuries, but actually I think this should be a better World Cup because most players are still kind of getting into the swing of they've got their match fitness. And I know we've crammed in quite a lot beforehand. And obviously for some players, that hasn't worked so well. But then weirdly enough, a lot of the injuries have been in training, right? So for Nkunku and Benzema, they were both in training. They weren't from games like played with the club teams. They were sustained.
Mane was in literally the last game of the season. Well, the last game before the break, he got injured in the first half. And then
Mane was actually in game. And obviously there's the whole conversation about how many players were taking the last game before the World Cup seriously, because obviously some teams were going hell for leather regardless. Other games in the Premier League, you could definitely tell some players were being a bit cautious, which, of course, understandably. But I do think, and remember, we're only saying this, what, like 4 games in? I think overall, the standard should be a lot better because I'm hoping people will be a lot more fresh. I mean, the group stages are always that weird kind of stage, right? It's like, you know, when you're at uni and it's Freshers Week and it's kind of there and it's not quite there and you're not quite sure what you're doing after Freshers Week. So it's that weird moment. When that sorts itself out, I think we're going to have some really good games. It might take 2 or 3, but I think generally the quality will be a lot better. And like, for instance, Ronaldo spoke about wanting to meet Messi in the final. I'm assuming it's mathematically like possible based on the groups and stuff. But, you know, I'm hoping for some like big clash games between countries that hopefully will be played at a high level. So, yeah, that's my probably weird take on this.
I'll come to you, Adi, but my view, I don't know, feel free to jump in and contest or agree with CJ's point, but I get the point that your players are now coming to the peak, but you need to remember we're not actually doing the same calendar that they normally do towards the December month. So they crowded in so many games towards the end of September and October, which is basically, 2 or 3 games a week. And then people have had to fly out straight away after a game to their national team. They probably have 10 days to kind of get together, do the tactics, get up to speed. The heat in Qatar obviously is adjustment. So my kind of view would be in summer, even though after season's over, there's still always that 2 or 3 week break in like May, June time that allows players to kind of recuperate, get up back to speed, but then it kind of sits in. So yeah, keen to get your view on it, Ade, what your thoughts are.
I have to agree with Carlisle. I think basically the thing about footballers, and you know, I'm not saying it like I'm a professional footballer, but I know from playing football, is frequency, succession of games, momentum is a massive thing in making the quality of your game like top. When you're having multiple games in a few weeks, as far as your body can cope, you the habits that you form, and when you get into good form, it's there with you because you've got another chance to play every few days, and that really does impact the quality of a player's game. And when you have that summer lull at the end of a year, first of all, as Carla said, you know, people would be tired, so you're getting the dregs of what has been, you know, typically long and grueling seasons, because it's the people that play in the most competitions that go to World Cups, or the better players basically from each country. So I think now we're getting players that are coming into form. I think we're going to have quite higher intensities, which is good, because a couple of tournaments that I've watched recently, some of the games have been really dull and really like boring to actually watch, despite it being a major tournament. A
holiday mode, right?
Yeah, because players have been either being too safe, they haven't had the energy to inject to try and take games to people, and they've not wanted to lose, so you've just seen stalemates. I think now you're going to see goals, you're going to see intensity, you're going to see people running at each other, because as well, players, as much as they played a lot of games recently, they haven't played the 60, 70 games, and these are athletes, the top athletes that have everything around them to make them stretch 60-game seasons. I think we'll see the tail off when it comes to the end of the Premiership or the end of, you know, the league season, and we'll start
very good
to
point.
Fade.
Very, very good point. Yeah, that's going to be interesting, especially with Champions League and, yeah, the energy, everyone's expanding. But Interesting takes, guys. And yeah, I'm just a bit conscious, obviously. I don't want to overstretch Adi's time here. So we're going to, but yeah, unless there's nothing else to add, I think we can just jump on the quiz if you guys are ready, Adi. So I think I'll let CJ go first, if you're ready, CJ.
Yep, let's go.
All right. So you know the format, true or false, multiple choice, or bang on the head. Gives you 1, 2, or 3 points, and it's all World Cup focused. What do you want?
Let's start with true or false.
True or false. El Hadj Diouf scored the goal that beat France in 2002 for Senegal. True or false?
I'm going to say true.
That is wrong. That is Papa Bouba Diop scored the goal. So, Mr. Carlisle, 0 points. Sorry, bud. Ade, what do you want? What's your poison?
True or false.
And he starts with that as well. So your true or false question is, Louis van Gaal has been the manager of the Netherlands twice before this World Cup. True or false?
True.
That is correct, sir. He has managed the Netherlands twice before this World Cup. So this is his third tournament. Ade, with 1 point. Carlisle, back to you. So you have multiple choice or bang on the head. Your multiple choice is,
how many
referees will there be at this World Cup officiating games? Will they be 2, 3, 4, or 5? How many female referees will there be at this World Cup? 2, 3, 4, or 5?
I'm not going to be too optimistic, so I'll go 4.
Wrong, sir. Sorry, it'll be 3. And I can tell you, if I'm not mistaken, one is from Japan as well. Can't remember the other two. I've not done my research, but I remember seeing the names. Sorry, but CJ is on 0 points. Ade, your choice is multiple choice or bang on the head as well.
Bang on the head.
He's going for the early goal. Here we go. So can you please tell me which goalkeeper won the best player of the World Cup in 2002? Which goalkeeper won the best player award in the World Cup 2002?
2002. That's the one that Brazil won, right?
Yes, sir.
Was it? I want to say Jens Lehmann.
Close call, sir. That is 0 points. It was Oliver Kahn.
Oh, free. I knew it was the German keeper.
Same team, but wrong name. Ade, still on 1 point. Carlisle, you've got a chance here to catch Ade. You are, I'm guessing, going for bang on the head because that's your last option, right? Can you please tell me, how many goals did Kylian Mbappe score at the last World Cup? Try to take a guess. I mean, remember, World Cups aren't like hugely scoring feats.
I'll go with 5.
Oh my God. So close. He was 4. Sorry.
Flip sake.
Ade.
Had a stinker.
Ade, you've gone naught across the board. Ade, you've won, but you've got a chance here to hammer it home with the last question. You have not got your multiple choice, correct? So your multiple choice question is, who is the shortest player out of these four at the World Cup tournament this year? Lucas Torreira, Lisandro Martinez, Joe Allen, or Tariq Lamptey? Who is the shortest player of the tournament out of these four? Lucas Torreira?
These are my short brethren, all my short brothers. Tariq Lamptey.
Oh, and he's won it. With the last kick of the game, I mean, you already won it anyway. But well done. 2 points there. Ade, you take the crown. 3 points in total. CJ, sorry. Better luck next time, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Whew. That was awkward.
Every quiz.
That was poor. This is going to be recorded as well. Oh, God. This is embarrassing.
Ade, Quizmaster, thank you very much for your time. You take home the crown. And thank you very much both for your time and enjoy the World Cup, I guess.
Figo's having to operate even more attackingly now. He really hits that one. Oh, that is just sensational from Luis Figo.